everyone, and welcome back, of course, to the Research Talks here from Slotbox with Alan Green and Dan Flynn. So how are we all? It's definitely summer. It's definitely
and it's
less interesting on the markets. I know we were just chatting before we recorded here. I think, Dan, you were saying that the general market, the sort of the top end, let's say the S&Ps or the FTSE, just continue to grind higher, but the liquidity is sort of dried up in the smaller end, which is expected. It always happens.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think it's helped by the escalation in the US around tension. Well, it's more than tensions now, isn't it? The US is back to attacking Iran. I don't think that's helping. I'm seeing a lot of drifting lower on my individual holdings. But yeah, the trackers and stuff that I invest in for the longer term, the last couple of days, maybe a little bit shaky, but on the whole, they're moving higher. We'll see what happens with the AI trend. I know a lot of people are calling for a correction, and that does seem to make sense given how much it has run. But we'll see. It's holding up okay on the whole at the moment.
Yeah, I think so. And I was talking to Rick Rule yesterday. We'll put the podcast out in the next week, and he's suggesting that, of course, the bull market in commodities is still very much alive and well, as we all know. But he does actually see maybe a few months of lack of liquidity in the sector before the next kind of run. So I actually thought that was quite good. He doesn't normally give me opinions on timing, but I thought that was quite good. It just gives a sense maybe that as we head into Q4 and even Q1, and we might start seeing that kind of second run up, if you like, in this current wave that we find ourselves in. So a good time, as I've said before, to just take a bit of stock over the summer and look at some positions that that you've got or potentially getting, and position ready for when the liquidity comes back in the autumn time. And Alan, you were away last week, so I guess nothing has really been catching your eye over the last week, has it?
It's been a quiet week, Mark, but the reality is, I mean, my sort of primary portfolio of stocks such as BATS, Barclays, Rio, Imperial Brands, and then I've got a smattering of funds. They've all had a really strong week. Today they seem to be pushing highs, but they'd be even higher were it not for the small caps. But of course, as Dan alluded to, they've drifted backwards over the past week or so, primarily due, it's just summer months, light trading volumes, a lot of people have gone away, and so of course we're waiting for things to improve. But one thing I did notice this morning, despite all the furore in the Labour Party with Andy Burnham about to take charge here in the UK, services output grew last month, and we've seen the economy expand by 0.7% over the 3 months to May. So I know we're in July now, but that's a fairly sort of solid underscoring of perhaps the unfairly maligned Rachel Reeves as she prepares to depart. But it's good to see the UK economy is holding up, and that of course could explain the resilience of the FTSE 100 as we go forward. So hopefully we come to Q4 and we'll see that big secondary run as Rick Rule has indicated.
Well, also potentially a good time to buy up things like gold, for example, which is now just below that 4,000 mark, which is always tempting when things get a bit cheaper for me to allocate a bit more over to that sort of commodity, for example. But it's always a good time, isn't it, to take a bit of stock. Things don't run as quick as they normally do over the summertime here. And talking of a company then that has been doing quite well, but is of course also seeing a bit of a, well, actually I'm going to call it a consolidation, was Delta Gold Technologies, of course, a quantum computing play listed on Aquis. And I mean, that's had a real nice run, hasn't it? But it's been sort of, I would say, consolidating, looking at the chart there, around that sort of 140-ish level since about May. And consolidation is good because, of course, it builds strength, doesn't it, before the next sort of move, whether that be up or down. One would, of course, hope it would be up with what Delta seem to be working on. But, Dan, you're going to talk to us about Delta Gold and remind us of what they're all about and why they're potentially worth looking at.
Absolutely. And I think you're totally right about the consolidation there. Delta's one I wanted to come back to. Since I last covered it at the end of April, the company has really started to move from talking about what it wants to do into actually delivering. And, you know, up until recently, the share price has responded. When I last spoke about Delta, it was trading around 80 pence. Since then, it's run as high as roughly £2 before pulling back to that sort of 140p-ish level today, like you're talking about. So it's still up a long way, but the pullback or consolidation potentially gives investors an interesting entry point again. I should say up front, I'm a holder myself. And for me, the investment case very much remains intact. You know, if anything, it's actually now got quite a bit more substance behind it, and the scene is set or more significant news flow from here. So the basic story for those who haven't heard us discuss this before is that Delta's trying to build IP for the quantum computing sector using nanoscale gold and other materials. The big technical problem in quantum is the qubit. Qubits are incredibly powerful in theory, but they're also very difficult to keep stable, controlled, and usable for long enough to do meaningful computation. So that's where Delta's work comes in. The company is exploring whether gold-based nanomaterials could be used to help create more stable and scalable qubit systems, or at least form part of the enabling material stack that future quantum computers may need. So it's not just gold plus quantum as a buzzword. The point is that gold has unusual properties at the nanoscale, and Delta is trying to turn those properties into predictable IP around qubit stability, control, and readout. So Delta's model is to work with leading universities, fund research, and secure exclusive rights to the IP that comes out of those programs. It's not trying to build a quantum computer itself. It's trying to own important enabling IP that, you know, the larger players, your Googles, Microsofts, etc., may need if the sector keeps developing. And the broader structure is what Delta has described as a center of excellence model. In simple terms, the idea is to bring together leading academic teams, connect research programs across institutions, and put Delta at the center of the IP that comes out of that work. So rather than relying on one lab or one idea, the aim is to build a wider research and innovation network around quantum materials as a whole. And all of that is why the recent updates that I alluded to matter. Back in April, Delta was still mainly a story about partnerships and potential. And since then, it started putting real markers down. First, the University of Toronto research team made a discovery that triggered Delta's option to enter into a technology license agreement. Delta then filed its first provisional patent application covering novel transducer structures for quantum devices. You know, I don't know exactly what that entails, but it's obviously linked to what they're doing, and it was a very big milestone. It gave Delta an early priority date for IP arising from the University of Toronto research partnership, and showed the sponsored research model can actually produce protectable IP. Then there was Penn State. Penn State has now filed 3 full patent applications related to Delta sponsored research. These relate to exploiting gold and other materials for their quantum mechanical properties with potential relevance to sensing, computing, and information processing. And importantly, Delta is bringing those applications into its IP portfolio under the existing agreement. So that's the delivery phase I'm talking about. The company now has 1 provisional patent application from the University of Toronto and 3 full patent applications by Penn State. It's also expanded its Penn State commitment from $3 million over 3 years to $6 million over up to 6 years. So the relationship is clearly moving in the right direction. And Delta has also continued the University of Toronto collaboration into year 2. I think there's 3 years planned in total, obviously with the opportunity to extend. So the university model is no longer just theoretical. It's producing patents, extending collaborations, and building that IP portfolio that the investment case depends on. Interestingly, Delta actually issued a technical update this week, and I'm not going to pretend it's light reading. It gets into the science behind the research and for a lot of investors, myself definitely included, is probably one to really read slowly rather than skim. But the point is that Delta is starting to give more color around what it's actually doing technically, which I think has been a sticking point for a lot of people who have struggled with the idea of backing a company that's unable to really divulge a lot of the critical detail on the research it's doing because of the disclosure agreements. That's completely beyond the company's control. It's just the nature of the early stage here. But for anyone who wants to start getting a bit more meat on the bone and wants to understand why the company thinks this research could matter, that update this week is definitely worth checking out. There's also been a corporate development angle. Delta appointed Dr. Thomas Davis as the first member of its strategic advisory panel. Might sound like a softer announcement compared to the patents, but I think it's useful. He brings advanced materials experience, IP protection experience, and commercialization experience. And that's what Delta needs if it wants to move from interesting research into valuable IP and commercialization. So moving on from the company, the broader sector backdrop is also helpful. Delta recently highlighted reports that the US government could award up to $2 billion in grants to quantum computer companies. And that's not the only headline relating to that sort of support from the government. I know there's been a few since then, but this is the one that the company put in an RNS. But I think the key message is that the US wants leadership in this sector. And if quantum becomes a bigger capital markets theme, companies with relevant IP could attract more attention. And that's especially interesting for Delta because it already has an OTC listing in the US. At the moment, that angle's still fairly quiet, but the US is obviously the hub for quantum. That's where the big companies are. That's where the capital is. And if Delta starts to get properly noticed there, then that could add another leg to the story. I mean, it's probably more significant than just another leg. I mean, if you get a little share of that US quantum retail interest, we've already seen other companies that have got hundreds of millions or billions of dollars valuation. So compared to Delta's 90 million valuation, I think it was at last count, that could really add some firepower there. So the big prize remains the same. Either Delta builds out a portfolio of IP that can be licensed and commercialized, or at some point a larger player decides it wants that IP and takes the company out. It's not guaranteed, it's still speculative. The patents need to develop, research needs to keep progressing. And that company overall has to turn scientific promise into commercial value. But compared with April, Delta now has much more behind it. And I think that's why the share price ran so hard. As I said up top, the interesting thing now is that it has pulled back. There's no obvious change in the investment case as far as I can see. Markets are just being choppy and Delta can move quickly because the free float is pretty small. So if you already believe in the story or if you want to take a first tranche, this pullback could be a decent chance to get exposure before the next phase of news flow. Because from here, the catalyst that could create more value is clear to me. There's more university partnerships, potentially including a UK institution. I think that's been alluded to in interviews. More patents, more technical updates, and critically, like I said, more US interests. So yeah, high risk, but Delta is starting to deliver. And if it keeps doing that, the recent dip could end up looking like a useful opportunity in what remains a very exciting early stage quantum IP story. I should also say the company also hosted a London panel discussion this week with some of the professors involved in the research. So I'm looking forward to seeing any footage that comes out of that. I think it was recorded. And yeah, I mean, that could also add a bit more color to the technical story here.
Yeah, well, that technical story, yes, that was out earlier in the week, wasn't it? And there's a lot of words in there that I have never even seen before. I was hoping we could get an interview with the company to sort of put it into layman's terms. I mean, on the surface of it, it reads very, very nicely, I think. But yeah. I think it could do with some, some perhaps some deeper diving. Yeah, I mean, what we have demonstrated with gold nanoclusters is, to my knowledge, a first in condensed phased quantum materials, a spin photon interface that simultaneously long-lived high purity and potentially chemically turnable across frequency windows. I mean, that's
you
just
know what I mean.
yeah. Alan does, I'm sure Alan is. He's like, yes.
They say, like, don't invest in things that you don't understand. But, I mean, there's only a very, very limited portion of the world that understands what that means. And I think the big prize is so big here. I think I understand that, and that's what's attractive about it.
Yeah, I think the big prize, right, you're right. Yeah, the whole excitement around quantum computing. And there's so much money going into it as well, isn't there? That's the other thing that's not really, I don't think it's widely known that much, but there is so much money going into this from it's like the current space race, basically. It's who can get there first, because whoever gets there first has the advantage over everything, and the opposite needs to defend against that, basically. So it's an exciting sector for sure, little understood, I suppose, at the moment by the masses.
Yeah, and I think, again, returning to your consolidation point, the company rose so much in such a short space of time that this never happened. These things don't go in line. We all know that.
Exactly.
So I'm not too worried about that. I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think if it gets some more news flow out that keeps evidencing that it's delivering, which it has been doing, then, you know, when the backdrop, when the markets in general sort of quiet down a little bit and this volatility stops punishing us, then maybe we'll see another run up.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, thank you, Dan. So let's move to Alan then. So Alan, you want to talk to us about GreenX?
You're absolutely right. I mean, that statement there, that was gobbledygook. It sounded like the opening lines from a 1970s prog rock album. You know, so I think they've got to work on their communications, really. But it's a huge, exciting sector nonetheless. Anyway, I digress. So GreenX Metals, the company is actually triple listed on the ASX, the London market, and also the Frankfurt Stock Exchange. So going to focus, obviously, on the London price and the London the London performance to date. Currently trading at 47.5p. Shares have traded as high as 58p on the year, as low as 34p, giving it a market cap of 148 million quid as we speak. So very much an asymmetric investment proposition here. So GreenX Metals was formerly Prairie Mining, and Prairie Mining owned two coal mines in Poland, the Jankarski mine and the Debiensko coal mine, and the Polish government, in its wisdom, decided to just take the mines back and without any form of recompense to GreenX. So GreenX basically took the company to a tribunal, or took the Polish government to a tribunal, and the under the Australian-Poland Bilateral Investment Treaty in October 2024. GreenX was awarded £252 million in compensation and interest, and it's been incurring interest since that point. And even Prime Minister Donald Tusk said that this is something we got horribly wrong. We should not have sort of gone down this particular road. But nonetheless, the Polish government appealed to the Singapore International Commercial Court of Justice in January this year, and the court rejected the award or rejected the claim by the Polish government against GreenX Metals. And following the rejection, GreenX received $1.6 million Australian dollars was awarded $1.6 million Australian dollars by the Singapore court, which has now been paid and will continue, obviously, to pursue the remainder of the money. And that, of course, explains some of the substantial market cap that the company has. So that's going on in the background. Meanwhile, the company has several investments several assets. Firstly, in Greenland, but the flagship project, which I'll come to shortly, is based in Germany. So the company has had assets in Greenland for some years, and in May this year, it announced that it had identified new tungsten and antimony targets at the Marjoris prospect in eastern Greenland, where there is the Eleanor gold project, and the Eleanor gold project contains the Noah Pluton region, which has geological anomalies. And further south from there, you've got the Marjoris North and Marjoris south prospects. Identified 2 kilometre-long anomalies at North Madres, close to an east-west fault structure, and Ben Stojkovic, the chief executive of GreenX, said at the time, the reprocessing of hyperspectral data has delivered new walk-up tungsten and antimony targets at minimal cost, right alongside the existing high-grade historical estimates for both assets. So that's basically an asset which is ready to go. But the company has been focusing its attention on its Tannenberg project in Germany. This is in central Germany. It's a large-scale copper and silver project, and at Tannenberg, work has been undertaken over the past century, in particular in the run-up to the Second World War. Nazi Germany were examining the historical mines, and they drilled a number of shafts there and identified a huge amount of copper. Now, the geological anomaly that supports this is known as the Kupferschiefer, which is translated means copper shale. And this is a sedimentary rock layer that spans across central Europe. It's very thin, between 30 and 60 centimeters thick, but it's a hugely prized target for mining. And in Poland's there is an active mine that's actually mining this Kupferschiefer phenomenon, and the details that were identified at this project have established that there's an exploration target there of between 144 and 279 million tons between 0.9% and 1.4% copper, which is absolutely huge. And the thing is, with the asset, the infrastructure is in place. A lot of the tunnels have already been dug. A lot of the work has already been done. But of course, as with any old project, it'll need updating to modern safety standards, and the area will need to be reworked in a similar way, perhaps to Cadence Minerals' Amapa project, where the old mine there is being refurbished and recommissioned. This will need more work than that, but nonetheless, the exploration target that was established has demonstrated potential for a globally significant copper source at Tannenberg in Germany, and this has been gleaned from archive data search and synthesis, and the team that have been working on it. In the same way as many projects of this size have identified a resource asset just from existing data. Once the work starts, as invariably seen in other projects, this could be many, many times bigger. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see how this progresses. In June, the company announced a study which found that Tannenberg, whilst the mineralization was consistent with Polish Kupferschiefer copper silver mines, it was also similar. And the study was a study completed by SGS Lakefield on core samples. Said it was typical of these Kupferschiefer deposits, confirming that the copper was of the same size and style of the minerals that were being produced at these Polish Kupferschiefer mines. So it's also identified the extraction process. The review supports a potential conventional flotation processing route, which reduces technical risk. In summary, establishes a proven development pathway with advanced metallurgical test work to secure and develop the mine. So in summary, the the opportunity offered by GreenX provides huge potential copper upside from Tannenberg. We have the nascent opportunity that exists in Greenland with the Eleanor North Gold Project. And of course, we have the final payment for the from the Polish government for the $252 million plus the interest that's owed to GreenX Metals, which will obviously provide the company with enough money, I would say, to significantly develop and further the Tannenberg Copper Project.
Okay, good. Okay, well, yeah, I know you've covered this one for a while, Alan. So what's your feeling right now then? It's a sort of fairly good position to keep people interested, to keep things going?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, the share price performance, we're sort of roughly, well, as I say, 47p. So steady progress this year. If you look at the chart, there was certainly a push from December through to February. But I think we're sort of building in stages. The study that was undertaken and the results which were announced in June certainly provide a very firm foundation and establish a potential method for extraction of the copper from the mine. But there's an enormous amount of data that the company's gone through to get to this point. But equally, there is an enormous amount of additional potential underground, because of course once you drill down, once you establish that the your initial findings are proven, then of course how much further does the strike go? Does the strike extend in this area? And we know with this Kupferschiefer deposit, it's a big deposit that runs throughout Central Europe, and the Richelsdorf mine or the Tannenberg or Richelsdorf region and the Tannenberg mine sits right in the middle of this anomaly.
Okay, excellent. Well, thank you, Alan. So, Dan, then a new company, Australian company that you interviewed this week, Corazon.
Yeah, absolutely. So Corazon came on my radar earlier this month, and after speaking with Managing Director Simon Coyle this week, I think the investment case is pretty strong. Corazon now owns a high-grade Western Australian gold project with an existing resource, a significant production history. It's got large Australian miner West Gold resources on the register and drilling's incoming. So this isn't a blank map explorer. It's got a known gold system, it's in a strong district, and it's got a clear opportunity to show the project is bigger than the market is currently pricing in. And right now, yeah, the market cap is just 19.5 million Aussie dollars, so around 10 million pounds. And that's the attraction. You get a lot of bang for your buck here. So let's start with the project. Corazon has just completed the acquisition of 100% of the Chalice Gold Project from West Gold Resources. Chalice sits in the Higginsville district of Western Australia within a greenstone belt called Norseman Kalgoorlie, which is one of Western Australia's most established gold producing regions. It already hosts a resource of 191,000 ounces at 2.7 grams per tonne gold. It sits on a granted mining lease, and it has previously produced around 645,000 ounces at an average grade of roughly 5.4 grams per tonne. That's a big point. Corazon isn't trying to prove gold exists here. It's acquired a known high-grade system with a resource already in place and a serious production history behind it. And the location's also really good. It's worth highlighting. So Chalice is just 22 kilometers from West Gold's Higginsville processing plant. And beyond that, it sits within 130 kilometers of seven operating processing facilities in total. So while there's no agreement in place yet and plenty of work still has to be done, the infrastructure backdrop there is pretty strong for a potential future production situation. And on that Westgold angle, Westgold hasn't just sold the asset and walked away. It now owns around 20% of Corazon. So it gives the company a major strategic shareholder and potentially opens the door to longer-term operational alignment. Particularly on that processing plant that's just 22 kilometers away. So again, nothing's guaranteed, but for a small gold company like Corazon, having one of Western Australia's leading producers on the register is a useful endorsement. So let's look at upside. The current 191,000 ounce resource was estimated using a $1,700 per ounce gold price assumption. Gold, as we all know, is much higher than that now. So Corazon has a straightforward optimization opportunity there. It can revisit the cutoff grade, revisit the pit shell, and see whether the current resource can be expanded under today's gold price environment. And on that basis alone, it seems unlikely the resource will stay at 191,000 ounces for long. That was a point Simon made in my interview this week. And so that's kind of the low-hanging fruit. It can just make what it's already got into something bigger. And then obviously we get into the new drilling and the upside there. So Corazon has been reviewing the historic Chalice drill database. It's identified additional high-grade mineralization outside the current resource shell. Near surface, that includes results such as 4 meters at 8.8 grams per ton gold from just 55 meters, 3 meters at 7.38 grams per ton from 28 meters, 3 meters at 4.9 grams per ton from 35 meters. And there's also, the company's also identified deeper intercepts below and beyond the existing underground workings. So yeah, the resource appears open in more than one direction. There's that near surface material that could support open pit expansion beyond the underground. There's deeper extensions beneath the existing workings. And there's also broader targets, one of those being a 700-meter untested strike extension north of an area called Olympus, and a lightly tested parallel corridor around 2 kilometers to the east of the deposit. So that's the growth case. There appears to be a lot more gold here over a much wider and deeper area than currently defined. And now Corazon is funded to test whether that is indeed the case. The company's completed a associated 16.5 million Aussie dollar placing, and it's planning's underway for an initial 10,000 meter phase one drill program at Chalice. That program's expected to start basically immediately. It says Q3, but Simon gave the impression that they want to get on with this. So yeah, we can set news flow pretty soon, I guess, relatively speaking. And the initial focus is on the near surface target area up dip from Kronos, which is one of Chalice's numerous resource areas. So the next few months should be important. What we want to start seeing is pretty clear. First, we want confirmation that the historic drilling and grades stand up. They can be verified by modern work today. That's a baseline the company can then build from. Beyond that, we want to start seeing just how big this system could be, how many ounces can be added from beyond the currently defined resource limits, whether near surface or deeper or entirely new areas. Of course, while that's all happening, we also want to see progress on re-optimizing the resource that's already there for today's gold price, like I mentioned. That's the quick win that could quickly make that existing 191,000 ounces figure much bigger. And I believe work on that is either underway or being planned to be underway pretty soon. So basically, what we're looking for are the start of the indications that Chalice can grow towards the 300,000 ounce and 500,000 ounce milestones that have been built into that Westgold deal. So those milestones, they don't guarantee anything, of course. Like, the rocks are the only guarantee, as we all know. But they do give investors in the market a useful sense of where the potential scale-up could be and where the company's thinking in terms of how big this project is. And that's where the re-rate opportunity sits. Because, you know, with a market cap of just 10.5 million pounds, 19.5 million Aussie dollars, the Corazon looks very modestly valued for a company that has an existing resource, high-grade production history, big shareholder, funded drill program, and a clear plan for resource growth. So the caveat we always have, there are risks. Drilling needs to deliver. Technical work needs to support everything that we've been saying. And any future production pathway will need studies along with funding, permits, and commercial agreements. But overall, I think the starting point here is really compelling. Corazon has moved quickly into an emerging gold developer, almost like in the space of a few months. And in the next round of drilling shows Chalice is larger, higher grade, or, you know, more development ready than the current market cap is pricing in, then the valuation can start to look very different. So yeah, that's a key point. It's not blue sky exploration. It's a known system, drilling ahead, clear set of catalysts here. I haven't taken a position yet, but it's one that I'm really paying close attention to. And I think you want to get in before the results, really, if you want to take a bet on that re-rate potential.
Mm. Well, that's the time to get in, right, when they're about to drill. Mm-hmm. So they're well-funded for that drilling, 10,000-ish metres, so that's the best time. So did you say that they want to target 300,000 to 500,000 ounces?
I'd need to get the exact wording up from the news release, but I think those were like the contingencies for deliverables on the deal. So again, you know, they always have those to cover if the project really takes off, the seller wants to get a bit of exposure. But I think in this case, they're a pretty useful indication of where things could head pretty quickly. And the fact that Westgold, who sold the project, has stayed on as such a significant shareholder shows that obviously they believe there's a lot of potential here. It's just in their position as a larger company with presumably a lot of other projects they're focusing on. They want someone like Corazon to come along and help advance it as their priority project. I should also say, sorry, I forgot, the company also has a couple of other projects. So it's not an all eggs in one basket situation. These are also in Western Australia, and they do look pretty convincing. It's just I wanted to focus on that one for this update. Perhaps I will go into those in a bit more detail when I cover them next time in a month or so.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Dan. Good to get an introduction to those guys. So, Alan, finish us off if you can with them. Facilities by ADF, please.
Facilities by ADF, epicode ADF, is listed on AIM, currently has a market cap of 14.5 million. Now, the company is well known if you're into your films, into your Netflix and all the rest of it. It provides production facilities, support vehicles to the TV and film industry. That's a range of vehicles, including makeup vehicles, production offices, artist trailers, toilets, generators, dining vehicles, tech vehicles, you know, they provide everything. Been following this company since 2024, and it's couple of things of note. Of course, the when we first started following the chief executive, or the then chief executive, Marsden Proctor, was very sort of bullish, and you know, he was very active on social media himself. So and then he left at the end of last year. So so the company's been in a bit of a limbo since then. There was also back in 2024 the Hollywood writers' strike, which impacted on results then, and I think a lot of people took fright because of the delays that this had on film production and the of course, you know, the resulting delays in ADF receiving money for the contracts that it had gone in for. Nonetheless, there's been a lot of support. In particular, a company called Harwood Capital have been steadily building a stake since November 24, and I've just been following their progress and what they've done with the company. Now, Harwood Capital is run by Christopher Mills. He's the chief exec. He's been there since 2011. Also, he also founded J.O. Hambro Capital Management with Jamie Hambro in 1993. So, you know, a lot of pedigree in investing in the markets. And his company have been steadily building a stake in the business. And in fact, they're looking at the share price performance. There was a dip to the year low in March. That year low was 9.5p. And then right after that, they announced the appointment of Singer Capital Markets as the new broker. And Harwood have continued to build their stake from, we were back at 15% in March 2025. That then increased to 17.8%, then to 18.2%, then to 19.2%, and most recently, that was announced back on the 15th of July. Harwood increased their stake again to 20.9%. So, you know, that's a massive stake to own, and I think that's highly indicative of the potential they see in the business, or the potential perhaps for a sale of the business. So, the company, as I say, provides. It provides all these facilities to the film and TV industry. The channels they work with include Netflix, Apple, Amazon, MGM, NBC, Sky, Disney, BBC, Channel 4, Channel 5, Paramount, HBO Max. And they've been involved in such productions as Black Doves, the second season of Ted Lasso, which is shortly to start. The series about Gareth Southgate, of course, Dear England. Then the series is called The Witcher, Trigger Point, The Gentleman, Rivals, Young Sherlock. So basically everything we see on our pay-for TV, they're involved in production with. They announced the full-year results for the year to December 31 in April this year. Revenues have increased by 17% to 41 million. Adjusted EBITDA was up to 9.2 million from 7.2 million. And also the margins were up to 22% from 20%. Net debt reduced to 12.3 million from 13.8 million. At the point of the results, the company was engaged in 311 different productions, which is pretty impressive. But I mentioned at the start, of course, that Mars and Proctor had left the company. In January this year, the company appointed a new chief executive, Nicola Piercy. And in March, a new chief executive or chief finance officer, William Wasdell, started. And they both purchased shares in the company shortly after that. So that is a good sign. So in summary, I think with the new board in place, the company is progressing well, making progress. It also announced that quarter one 2026 is in line with expectations. There's a healthy pipeline of business, and the full year outcome is expected to show a similar weighting to the second half, because I think there's the natural delay in getting some productions underway. So for their financial year, the payment weighting always takes place in the second half. But underlying all this, you've got the new board in place, you've got this steady growth, and then you've got Harwood Capital, who have been steadily snapping up shares and now own 20.9%. So any more than that, and they'll have to make a bid for the business. But of course, that won't happen. But it's indicative of what they expect the business to do, or perhaps the fact that they expect to see possibly a buyer in the wings for the company at some point. Just one final note: the company purchased a business called AutoTrack, which obviously puts down temporary roads on fields and inaccessible places in order to get all of the equipment and the trailers to site. That company contributed a chunky first year to the business, 9.3 million in revenue in year one, and it's also that they're also expecting solid growth from AutoTrack in the year to come as well. So that's it.
Okay. Excellent. Well, thank you, Alan, and thank you, Dan, for talking to us there about a few companies to perhaps consider as we enjoy the summer here. And do enjoy your weekends, and we'll speak next week.
Thank you, guys. Have a good weekend.
Cheers, guys.
If you enjoyed this interview, then give us a thumbs up, a like, or a retweet. Subscribe to us on YouTube or follow us on Twitter and hit that notification bell to be the first to know when we release new content. There's loads of great content on our website too, across all our programs at stockboxmedia.com. Thank you for watching.